Welcome to the Boston Celtics postgame show on CLNSradio.com.
Off the turnover, Rondo reverse, banks it in.
Fans, this is your destination for interactive Celtics coverage all season long.
Kelly still has time, takes it.
So what are you waiting for? We want to hear from you. Dial in at 347-215-7771.
Green out of the corner, got another one.
Now let's get it started.
Good evening, Celtics fans, and welcome to the CLNS Radio Celtics postgame show powered by Lynda.com. 2015 is well underway, but it's not too late to kickstart your new year. Challenge yourself to learn something new with a free 10-day trial to Lynda.com. Lynda.com is used by millions of people around the world, has over 4,500 courses on topics like web development, photography, visual design, and business, as well as software training like Excel, WordPress, and Photoshop. Courses are taught by experts, and new ones are added to the site every week. Whether you want to set new financial goals, find work-life balance, invest in a new hobby, ask your boss for a raise, find a new job, or improve upon your current job skills in 2015, Lynda.com has something for everyone. That's Lynda.com. Well, folks, I'm your host, Rich Conti. Thanks for joining us tonight on a night when the Celtics dropped a 93-87 game to old friend Kevin McHale's Houston Rockets at the Garden. I'll be joined in a moment by my co-host, CLNS Radio founder Nick Gelso. We also have Jerome Almeida out there on the Twitterverse and on Facebook covering us on social media tonight. Follow us on Twitter at CLNS Radio and engage with us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/CLNS. Later on in the show, we'll be getting a call-in from Jared Weiss with his locker room report. And you can call in to talk to us at 347-215-7771. And right now we have my host, Nick Gelso, on the line. Looks like Nick just dropped off. Well, it was a disappointing loss tonight in the first game back home after a 3-3 road trip. And it seemed like fans were getting their hopes up a bit. And there was even mention of making the playoffs out there in the media. And they made it a game down the stretch, you know, cutting what was a 19-point game at one point. I believe they got it as close as 3 on several occasions in the fourth quarter. And taking a look kind of through the box score, the Rockets were led by Donatas Monteyunas, who finished with 26 points and 12 rebounds on 11 for 16 shooting, including 3 of 5 from three-point land for the 7-footer. Houston, of course, loves to shoot the three-pointer. Celtics did a good job on James Harden as he finished 4 for 21 for the field, 2 for 7 from 3 with 14 points. And they managed to keep Harden off the line. He leads the NBA in free throws per game right now this season at around 9 per game, and he only attempted 5 tonight, hitting 4 of them. Harden also finished with 6 rebounds and 7 assists. The Rockets got a decent game off the bench from Josh Smith, who they acquired about a month ago when Stan Van Gundy and the Pistons found a way to dump his contract. Smith finished with 15 points and 10 rebounds on 6 for 13 shooting, 1 for 3 from the three-point line, which we know he loved so much. The Celtics, on the other hand, got a tough night out of Jared Sullinger, finished with only 8 points and 7 rebounds on 4 for 14 shooting. Brandon Bass had a pretty good night, 17 points on 6 for 11 shooting, 5 of 8 from the line, and 8 rebounds. Avery Bradley had a tough game from the field, shooting 3 of 12 and finishing with 10 points. And Marcus Thornton had a pretty big game off the bench. He got 23 minutes off the pine, finished with 17 points and 7 rebounds on 6 for 13 shooting, including 4 of 6 from three-point land, which was really a big factor in getting the game closer down the stretch. And we've got Nick out there on the line. Nick, as I was saying, a disappointing loss tonight in that first game back after a 3-3 road trip. It seemed like the fans that were getting their hopes up a little bit on that road trip, and there was even some mention of making the playoffs out there in the media. Celtics, of course, made it a game down the stretch tonight, but was this type of game a reality check for the Celtics fans and perhaps for the team itself that there's still kind of a long way to go?
Maybe, Rich. I mean, they did play good defense in the second half and fought back a couple times. So, I don't know. Did you honestly think that after that road trip, do you want them to make the playoffs?
Well, you know, actually I would want them to make the playoffs. I actually don't think, they've got a very good chance of it, despite how weak the East is. Several of us have talked about this in the past, but I'm not a big fan of trying to ride the lottery luck. I think Celtics fans know we've struggled with that in the past, and I know Ty Ray is a big believer, like myself, in the idea that creating that winning culture and getting the experience playing in the playoffs is invaluable for young players. So yeah, I would like to see them make the playoffs, but I don't think I really, even coming off of a 3-3 road trip, had really that much confidence the team was really well positioned to do that. They won, one of those games was out in Portland. Portland, of course, a very good team, but they were playing without LaMarcus Aldridge that night. They were shorthanded. Also, I think they were missing Nick Batum, who's another key part of their roster. And then the Celtics had fought a couple of tough wins against the Denver Nuggets and then Utah Jazz, who are both kind of struggling teams. They did drop that tight game to Golden State, a game which they were down big and then kind of clawed their way back into it and fell short. But I wonder if games like that game against Golden State and games like tonight against some of those top echelon teams, if it's a case of they work hard enough at it, they're clearly an NBA team, they've got some talent out there, but really when push comes to shove, if a solid team isn't taking them lightly, they really don't have much of a chance, to come out of those games with wins consistently.
I couldn't disagree with you there, but it is a good experience. It's nice seeing them play a tight game down the stretch like tonight, where there was a big gap in the first half, but in the second half fought back well, and then actually calling some out of timeout plays is kind of fun to watch. And I don't know. It is kind of, right? It's nice to see them in that type of situation, because we've not seen a lot of it this season. But no question, they pretty much they do play hard, and like you said, there's some hidden talent on this team. But it's hard to build any kind of chemistry when the parts are moving as much as they have this season.
Yeah, that's a great point, and I kind of expect them to continue to move, don't you? The trading deadline is about three weeks away, and there's that. But even a little bit longer term, I look at this roster, and a couple of us have talked about this in the past. And I know I might be a little bit in the minority opinion here, but I don't see anybody on this roster that's really significantly solidified a place for them in the future. Is there anybody really that you look at and go, I think it's a really strong likelihood that guy is going to be here in 3 years? Yeah. No, I think it's possible, that Smart could be around and Solinger could be around or Olynyk could be around, but I wouldn't expect more than one or two of those guys to still be around 2 or 3 years from now. Do you?
No. I mean, this is a team that's on the crossroads. He's collecting pieces and going to just, distribute them and look for a return. And I think that's where a lot of the frustration for fans comes in, is because he's trading for a lot of intangibles. You can't put a face, a name, or even a jersey to what Danny Ainge is collecting. And it takes patience and a lot of insight and to really translate that into assets and something that turned into a winning team or environment or culture when he's trading for draft picks, second round draft picks. And it's frustrating for fans, but they've been pretty good this season. Tonight, fans attendance were amazing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I think you just touched on something really insightful there, Nick. When you talk about the fact that Ainge is trading for nameless, faceless draft picks at this point, I think the fans are hungry to get attached to players, and it's just the team is in so much transition, and I think while there certainly has been transition going back a year and a half now, I think that really hit folks home with the Rondo trade. It's like, okay, we're going to be in for a quite a bit of churn over the next year or two, the next couple of off season. And I think that's tough on fans, as you mentioned. It's frustrating because you want to start to get attached, right? You want to see those numbers and you want to go out and buy those jerseys. And it's really hard when you see folks come shuffling in and out of town. And to be honest, I looked out there at one point in the second quarter and there was a lineup of guys like, I think we were looking at Gerald Wallace and Tayshaun Prince and Evan Turner and Marcus Thornton, and it was was hard not to think back, you know, almost 20 years ago to those disastrous 1995 and 96 teams where it seemed like every night there was like a new guy showing up in a green jersey. And, you know, I start to wonder, you know, of course, you know, our good friend Larry H. Russell has his book out, the, you know, the about the Dark Ages. And you know, you wonder, are the Celtics headed for that doldrums again? You know, nothing could be as bad as that infamous and mysterious Dark Ages in the famed history of the Boston Celtics. And of course, CLNS Radio's own Larry H. Russell has the inside story. If you folks haven't read the book yet, it's such a great read because he did such a good job really unearthing all these little tidbits in that darkest chapter in Celtics history in his debut book, Fall of the Boston Celtics, how bad luck, bad decisions brought the mighty Celtics empire to its knees and ushered in the Dark Ages. And you folks can go out to CLNSradio.com. What's that?
Yeah, the longest title in the history.
It really is.
But it's an easy read and a good read. Very interesting.
Oh, it totally is. Folks, go out to clnsradio.com and you can find the book out there. And yeah, I highly recommend it because he did such a great job of digging into all the behind the scenes stories, you know, talking about Dave Gavitt and ML Carr and the roles they were playing in the front office and Jan Volk. Yeah. And, you know, I wonder, are we watching history repeat itself here, Nick, for the next, you know, year or two?
Yeah, I don't think so. I sure hope not. I mean, yeah. If you read Larry's book, you'll hear there's a lot of things that came together, bad things that came together for the franchise back then, which has led to, I mean, I don't know about you, Rich, but I remember 88, 89, 90, 90, 91, 90, you had a little bit of a pop where you felt maybe some enthusiasm for the team, but there was a sense of winding down through that whole period, especially after Bias passed away, and then when Bird retired and Lewis passed away, shockingly, you know, as well. I think that there was just no more negativity. And then Rick Pitino came and Red got, how could you avoid out Red Auerbach? But, you know, these are things that happen, and it's great. It's a great read in Larry's book, and it also really does separate what's going on now as compared to the mess that was back then.
Yeah, that's a great point. And, you know, I tell folks, you know, of course, we always get razzed by Lakers fans, you know, after the 2010 championship, you know, they talk about, well, you know, you guys are going to have another 22 years of losing. And, you know, my retort is always, listen, if you look at all of the things that happened, Larry does such a great job outlining them in the book, but, you know, the death of not one, but two potential Hall of Fame players in Bias and Lewis. You know, you had absentee ownership with Thanks Dad Gaston. You had just all this management incompetency and infighting and lack of alignment in the organization. And, you know, if you look at where the team is now, you know, they've got the biggest thing to me is just how committed this and stable this ownership is. Right? These guys, Wick wants to win. I don't think anybody enjoyed that run from 2008 through, say, 2012 more than Wick did. You saw him out there beaming that giant smile down there on the baseline every game. And I think he desperately wants to get back there. And I think he and Ainge are on the same page. And now Ainge and Stevens are on the same page. And I think that's huge. And, you know, they've got so much flexibility. You know, the roster is going to go through. I think it's going to continue to be upheaval through the rest of the season, and then I think you're going to start to see the groundwork really being laid this offseason. You know, they really need to think about the next two off seasons and how they're going to play all this flexibility they have, because I think teams like Toronto and Atlanta are really showing that, you know, this idea of you need to have a big three, you need to go out and bring in those three, you know, top 10, top 15 players if you're going to compete for a championship. I think we're moving out of that era. You know, I think teams like Toronto and Atlanta and really San Antonio, right, was the forerunner of all that. You know, obviously Tim Duncan's a Hall of Fame player. Obviously Tony Parker is a all-star caliber caliber player, and Manu Ginobili has been, you know, one of the best international players of all time. But if you look, you know, over last season and the season before, none of those three guys are top 15, maybe even top 20 players in the game. And but they have a roster that fits, and Toronto and Atlanta is doing the same thing, and they play together and they play for each other, and their skills complement each other. And I think that's what Ainge is looking at as the blueprint really right now to, hey, maybe we can get back up to being a 50-win team really quickly. And from that point on, that's when you can start go big game hunting, right? And try to make yourself attractive to a Kevin Durant or somebody of that stature.
Mm, wow. Yeah, and the other thing, too, about this ownership group and Ainge, but mainly starting with that, I think the ownership group is they really, really embrace the history and the culture. They bring the alumni back around. They celebrate different milestones in a very similar way than was done, you know, 30 years ago. So they really brought back a lot of the tradition and what old school Celtics fans like about the Celtics, which is what makes it frustrating for old school fans during all this, because like you said, I'm going to round this out perfectly, Rich. Like you said at the top of the show, you know, it's hard to follow. Fans are kind of frustrated because it's hard to follow any player through 82 games even, because they're moving so quick. So, you know, and I think that's what frustrates older fans, but older fans have been here before and will be more patient, while the bandwagon fans, whether older or young, have already jumped ship. And I think that there's a lot more residual this time around too, because there's not the 22-year drought. So, you know, hopefully the majority of the fan base stays put and waits this out. And I think as to what you're saying about the next two offseason, I'm going to tell you, if he doesn't make some sort of a splash this offseason, whether he has a grand plan that's, you know, out over 3-4 years, or whether it's a short term or a shorter fix, fans are going to get very, very, very frustrated. I mean, it will be, you know, two or three off seasons in really one where it seems to me like, and I think to a lot of the fans, and whether it's right or wrong, is that he's collecting all these parts for, you know, some off season moves that are going to really make a difference. Otherwise, he's just got a locker room full of, again, you know, empty jerseys that are just, you know, you know what I'm saying? Draft picks. You're looking at draft picks, not people. So he's got to start making moves, or the fan base too is going to get frustrated. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah,
I think that the fan base will go nuts. We were there on draft night between, hosting the event at the waterfront at Renaissance, and then checking in with Jared at TD Garden. You saw there was a grumble, you know, with the lack of activity, and then fans came around pretty quick, but I think he's got to do something pretty substantial this offseason. It doesn't have to be a KG Ray Allen move, but anything to get something that points towards light at the end of the tunnel. And that might mean a person that's going to be there. Like you just mentioned, there's really nobody on this roster that's a lock to be there in two or three seasons. So maybe that's just the one fixture player that would be there a little bit more long-term that fans could start to follow and you know, be compelled to.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think, you know, fans need to see, like you said, that positive direction and the actual starting to build things back up, not just by collecting the assets, but by turning those assets into players, into jerseys. And, you know, it's got to happen either, you know, he's got to get, like you said, that you know, at least one or two players that folks can go, okay, yeah, that, you know, that guy might not be a superstar, but that guy's going
to
be.
No, but it's a start, yeah.
Right, right. And whether that's through the draft, whether it's through trades, whether it's through free agency, he's got to at least pick up a couple of guys. I think that the challenge is going to be, you know, how much of those assets do you squander this offseason, how much of those assets do you spend this offseason, as opposed to, you know, holding them, you know, for the following offseason, when we know the salary cap is going to jump up again significantly. Right. And there's a monster free agent class, at least as it stands right now. now with guys like Kevin Durant and John Wall. You know, the free agent draft class, or the free agent class this offseason, has some big names in it. There's, you know, some significant doubt as to whether they'll make it all the way to the free agency. You've got guys like LaMarcus Aldridge, who by all, you know, accounts is happy in Portland. You've got Marc Gasol, who is being a little bit cagier about his intentions. So he might be a target, but he's going to be frequently sought after, obviously. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think if Ainge thinks he can get that big fish, you know, maybe he holds back a little bit on signing too many guys. Otherwise, you know, I think, again, Atlanta and Toronto have proven you can go out and instead of trying to land those one or two superstars in free agency or via draft, go out and bring in 3 to 4 to 5 to even 6 guys at more reasonable contracts. And the Celtics have the flexibility to do this now, but guys whose pieces all fit. And you look at what a guy who's been considered mainly a journeyman for his career and now he's an all-star is doing in Atlanta in the right situation. A guy like Kyle Korver, you know, who's been, you know, at times in his career
incredible.
A punchline.
Right.
But he's, I mean, yeah, he's the story of the NBA right now, or at least mm-hmm. one of them. I mean, with his 3-point shooting and how that's really revolutionized, you know, or how it's consistent with the way the game is being transformed, and Atlanta really capitalizing on that. And you look in Toronto, a guy like DeMar DeRozan, who, again, with the right players around him, all of a sudden starts to flourish. And I think, you know, you can go out and get, you know, 3, 4, 5 guys in that 8 to 10 to 12 to 15 million dollar range, not paying that $20 million, you know, price tag that's going to really limit your options, and do that and maybe get up to that 50 win level really, really quickly.
Well, that's what I'm referring to. I mean, that's laying the groundwork, isn't it?
Yep.
You know, that's what I think the fan base would be happy with, you know, to be able mm-hmm. to see and yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think that's exactly what he hopefully will do between now and next season, hopefully.
Yeah. Yeah, and going back to...
I think Rondo... I want to just step back and mention the Rondo trade really, you know, setting in with fans, and I think you're right, it did. But with me, I think I flipped the channel a bit with the Jeff Green trade. I knew he was going, mm-hmm. and I wanted him to go since he came to Boston, so I didn't really... matter to me I had no emotional attachment to him at all, but mm-hmm. I was just not thrilled. It was another one. And again, I think that's why I'm relating to some of the frustration of fans, because it was another one of those trades that was like, what exactly, let's try and measure this, you know,
yeah.
Because I had a great expectation for what we would get back with Jeff Green, because I thought he was a player in that swingman, small forward type position that could really benefit a contender or a team on the tip of contending. So I thought, and I felt like they were more in demand, which kind of justified Danny overpaying him. And here it really wasn't, it was kind of like another anticlimactic move. And at that point I thought, okay, now I am certain 100% that this team is completely deconstructed. And, you know, you look at the roster now and there's not one person on that team, you know, not only, yeah, that obviously was part of the championship runs, and I'll say that plural, but also anybody that you really are endeared to or that I feel very attached to. I mean, there's Brandon Bass. I want to just kind of, although he played really good tonight, I really want to just see Brandon go, because I think it's just a shame that all his career being a real blue collar guy and positive, a locker room guy, he's stuck in this situation right now. I think I'd love to see him just cut loose. And then there's Avery Bradley. I never really had any great affection for Bradley. I kind of always felt like his defense, I mean, he's a wonderful, amazing defender, but I always felt like people used his defense to cover up a bunch of other sins. So I never really, really loved Bradley all that much. So I don't really have any affection or attachment to this team at all. And I think that I'd like to start seeing that again. So talking about laying the groundwork, I mean, it'd take a long time to get to the Atlanta type or Toronto type situation where you're putting a lot of pieces together like that. I think you do have to have really, really good coach. Well, we'll see what happens. I mean, we'll see.
Yeah,
I'm
completely
thinking out loud,
agree. Yeah, no,
thinking out loud.
It's great stuff, and I agree about the coaching part, but I think in terms of putting those pieces in place, I think they've got the opportunity to do that pretty rapidly, and here's why. You talk about the green trade and being disappointed with the return, and I think a lot of people were disappointed with the Rondo trade in terms of what the return was. But
overblown.
Even setting that aside, I think the value that they really got back was flexibility and opportunity. And I don't just mean the salary cap flexibility, right? Because honestly, they could have had that by letting Rondo walk and Grima. I think it just created basically flexibility in terms of the roster. I mean, Ainge has, there's so much fungibility in this roster that virtually it's almost like you've got 15 open roster spots right now. And no baggage and no expectations around any of them.
Recalling back to when Rondo did this or Rondo did that or they did it. I mean, really, he cut all ties with the previous teams. And also, I want to finish your point, but I think Stevens has been a different coach since Rondo is gone as well. I got the sense I can only relate it really to the restaurant business, Rich, because that's my roots in the restaurant business. But it felt like a restaurant where your chef kind of dictated what was going on. And then there's a day where the restaurant owner says, okay, I've had it. I can cook the recipe, so get out. And all of a sudden the owner becomes the focal point, the leader of the business. And that's similar to kind of how I felt like Rondo was a shadow over anything Stevens tried to do, and I'm speculating, but anything Stevens tried to do as far as breaking out and becoming the leader of the team and his word being, gospel or whatever. And now that Rondo is gone, it seems like Stevens has turned into a different coach than he was before, probably a better coach.
Yeah, I think that is a good analogy. And here's the thing, you use terms like focus or focal point and shadow. And, I think those things were true, but not necessarily in a negative sense. Like, although, we had a chance to talk on Celtics Beat with Sean Grandy, and both on and off the air, he was very, even though he laid strong hints that a Rondo trade was imminent, he was, spoke very positively about the leadership that Rondo showed this year. But, even if that leadership was positive, I think you're right in the sense that there was so much focus on him, positive and negative, that it was difficult for the franchise to kind of find its way forward, right? Because there was so much energy and attention focused on him and his situation, and to a lesser extent, Green too, in the sense that if you have established NBA players on your roster like that, when you have been adding other pieces, you're doing it, or even developing some of the young guys, you're always doing it in the context of how do they complement those two pieces that you've already got. Right. Yep. And you go into the draft and you think, well, OK, maybe it doesn't make sense to draft a point guard because we have this guy, or, maybe we don't draft a big rangy wing because we've got Jeff Green. Or when you go out and look for trades, you look for guys that are going to, you say, oh, well, we'll find a big man that can run the floor with Rondo, or, let's find, an outside shooter to take a little bit of the pressure off of Green. Now, all of that kind of focus that was on those guys is gone. And that's what I mean by the opportunity and the flexibility. Right? Because now you can look at the entire landscape of free agency, of trades, and of the draft with a blank slate and say, okay, these are how I'm going to put some pieces together without having any pre-existing pieces already in place that you have to kind of, work around, both, positive and negative. And I think that's really the return that they got in those trades, was just kind of, like you said, dropping that baggage. But I don't necessarily mean baggage in the traditional, Josh Smith sense, right? Where somebody's a negative influence
Poor
on
Josh
a team.
Smith.
I know, he's my favorite. He's my favorite guy to pick on. Or for Celtics fans, another polarizing guy was Antoine Walker, who I believe, there were times where he was a very positive influence on this team, or on this franchise, and then there was times where he was clearly a destructive, negative influence on the franchise. And that's what Ainge did when he came aboard, is he realized, wow, there's so much attention on this guy that I can't find a path forward to this with this franchise until I move him. and clear the decks there. And I think there was some element of that in the Rondo trade, and to a lesser extent the Jeff Green trade. And now we've got that blank slate. And the problem with the blank slate is there's nobody to really to get attached to. And I think, again, bringing in at least a couple of pieces this offseason that fans can then say, all right, I'm going to get attached to this guy because he's going to be here down the road a bit and be part of the future. And so I can start to invest in them, you know, a little bit emotionally and go out and buy that jersey and you know, have my kid root for him and get excited about him. I think that's what folks are looking for. And, you know, earlier you talked about Wick and talked about the respect that the ownership group shows to the legacy of the franchise and the alumni, as you put it. And, you know, that just doesn't extend to the John Havlicek's and kind of the old time guys. It you know, it's a lot of the recent alumni, even guys who were, you know, more minor players in the franchise, you know, recent championship in 2008 and some of those runs, you know, they're getting recognized when they come back into town. And I think players across the league have noticed that. I think they notice this organization, and we all know the familiar trope that, you know, free agents won't come to Boston. Do you think there's the opportunity to change that over the next couple of off seasons with these free agents class?
I don't know, and it's always frustrated me because it's all based on player current, you know, the current state of the way players think, I think. I mean, it's just cold. It has nothing to do with championships and culture and exactly what you're talking about, which is what attracted players to Boston in the past. And sometimes, you know, the willingness to be traded in is also has to be put into that bracket, too, of you know, free agency, because we always talk about, oh, not many free agents want to come to Boston. But I'll tell you what, a lot of great players accepted roles coming to the Celtics over their history. You know, Dennis Johnsons and Bill Waltons and, you know, great, great players who got traded in. And because you don't have to accept a role. You know, you can come in and be a douchebag.
Yeah.
You know, and Dennis Johnson was a douchebag prior to getting here. So, you know, so yeah, it's frustrating to me today because it's, you're asking about changing the culture or changing that perception. I don't think it's that easy because players today put championships after comfortability and opportunity off the court, you know, and that's changing.
Folks, give us a call at 347-215-7771 if you want to talk to Nick and I about the future of the Celtics or the game tonight. And yeah, I mean, that's a great point, Nick. I'll relate a story I read in the last couple of weeks. Of course, one of the members of this season's or this offseason's free agent class is DeAndre Jordan, the young center from the Los Angeles Clippers, currently out there playing out west for Doc Rivers, the coach who's kind of coveted him for a while, right? And and, you know, he's really developed as a young player. He's, you know, one of the league's leading rebounders right now, a good rim protector, and, you know, doesn't, you know, have much offensive skill, but is still kind of a physical force down there. And, you know, his free agency is impending, and apparently he was asked about it. And, you know, he listed weather as his number one priority in where he signs to play. And so you're right. You know, I think a lot of young players do think like that. But here's my thing, Nick. It only takes that one player. Right.
And honestly,
if DeAndre Jordan, while I think, you know, there are skills that I'd love to see on the Celtics, if those are his priorities, I'm not sure I want.
I don't want him here. Yeah.
You know what I mean? You know, that's not the guy that you want in the trenches with you in the fourth quarter of a game seven. You know, if a guy who's, you know, looking for the easy way out in life and what he values is comfort, you know, is he going to really suck it up, you know, when he's dragging in the fourth quarter of a playoff game and needs to kind of, you know, fight through that wall? So, you know, it only takes that one guy with their priorities in the right place. And, you know, is that a Marc Gasol? Is that a Kevin Durant? I don't know, but, you know,
well,
it only
Kevin
takes
Durant. We've been talking about this for a year now. You brought it up, and I think I ran with it since. I mean, it does sound so perfect, doesn't it? But we'll see. It does sound perfect.
Yeah,
he's,
you know,
the type
and
of player that doesn't. He's the opposite of what I just described, and that's the player. Don't take it away, but diminish some of his talent. Keep his heart, and that's the player you want on this team. You know, talent or not, you know, he's got that Celtic, there's something about them that makes you feel that way, you know, beyond the talent.
Yeah, I completely agree. Obviously, he's, you know, if not number one, two or three, you know, right in that mix, along with LeBron James, of course, and now Anthony Davis, who's kind of shot himself up into that top stratosphere of players. And, you know, I think when I first threw this out, gosh, how long ago was it, Nick? Maybe a year and a half ago at least?
I think it was the deciding game, Knicks Celtics, first round. I think I want to say that was the game.
Yeah,
and, it was a while ago.
And I think, you know, part of it might have been, you know, trying to, you know, console myself after that tough playoff series. Some of it was probably a little bit tongue-in-cheek to cause some trouble, but some of it was also just looking at Oklahoma City and looking at what they did in the Harden trade and deciding that they weren't going to spend to be a winner, and just kind of looking down the road and say, you know what, it's tough to win championships, and players, you know, their legacies now are increasingly impacted by their ability to win championships, and they start to feel that pressure. And, you know, he had a player alongside him in Russell Westbrook, who's wonderfully talented, but could be kind of, you know, tempestuous at times and kind of, you know, seeking the limelight. And, you know, I kind of thought it was not unreasonable that at some point he was going to kind of be faced with the reality that it was going to be difficult for him to win in Oklahoma City, right? That they had a window and they weren't able to get a title. And then, you know, with the injury this year and then the injury to Westbrook, it kind of put them a little bit behind the eight ball in the playoffs, where they'll probably still make the playoffs, but they're going to have a real tough time getting home court advantage in the first round. And we know the West is a killer. So this could be another year now, you know, going back to what was it? They made the finals in 2012. And, you know, now we'll be talking about the 2015 finals. So that's 4 years where they were kind of in a window where they could win a championship and they didn't. And so maybe it's
go back even further, really.
Yeah, 2011 was the first kind of started to make noise in the playoffs. And so,
yeah, I guess.
You know, but, you know, I think so, you know, if he is that guy that really kind of values that being part of that, you know, the legacy of a great franchise like the Celtics and part of that rich history, I think the Celtics potentially have a shot. I think they're going to be, you know, they're going to face stiff competition, you know, if and when it gets to that point, because from Oklahoma City, obviously, because they've got, you know, the ability to you know, if they decide to go over the luxury tax limit, they can pay him more than anybody else can. You know, you're going to run into tough competition from his hometown Washington Wizards, who I'm sure are trying to keep some salary cap space in that offseason earmarked for him. And of course, the New York Knicks are you know, probably going to make a, you know, hard play for him. But hey, you know, we know Danny Ainge has coveted this guy for a long time. I think we all remember, you know, the shot of Ainge sitting in the stands in the NCAA tournament, sitting next to Durant's mother.
doing
the Danny, bending her ear about God knows what, right? And you know, I could see him kind of having his eye on that prize. But, you know, who knows? Like I said, it only takes that one guy. And you know, once you get below that top tier of free agents, you know, it's who can pay, right? And who can put a player in a situation where they know they're going to be in their comfort level in terms of on the court. And I think, you know, they're even if they don't land a big fish, I think they're going to be able to, you know, put some pieces around or put some pieces together that can, you know, get this team, particularly in the East, back into playoff contention. I don't think that's really that difficult a road for them.
All this heavy Celtics talk, we might as well kind of relish in the. I'd never relish in anybody's injury, but boy, the Lakers! Oh, they are a mess. And to pay Kobe all that money and oh my goodness. So
yeah, part of me, yeah, as much as antipathy as I have for Kobe, it is kind of hard to see a guy who's clearly a legend, you know, despite whatever personality and sociopathic tendencies he might have, you know, clearly one of the game's great players, and it would be a shame to see him go out like this.
As Kobe has gotten older and we've competed against him less and less in championship situations, I've gotten a kick out of him. I think it's nowhere similar to the Magic situation where you kind of always, you love hate. And when he came back, you reminisced about great times where Kobe, you kind of want to hate him. But at the same time, yeah, I feel bad for the dude. I mean, took all that money, though, too. I mean, I feel bad for the Lakers. I just wonder what's – I mean, they've always been so good at rebounding, the Lakers, right? I mean, we're talking about the 90s and the 2000s and, you know, the Celtics falling into, you know, LHR's doldrums. But the Lakers, I mean, how do you come back from within, like, 3-4 seasons from the Magic Johnson situation? I mean, that's just remarkable.
Well, here's the thing. Yeah, here's the thing. I mean, you know, could the Lakers be headed for that type of dark ages, right?
That's where I'm going with this.
Yeah, you know, we're used to, you know, the Lakers, oh, they're the Lakers, they'll find a way, right? But, you know, Dr. Jerry Buss isn't around anymore. Jim Buss is running the show. And I don't
know. Another team in town.
Yeah, and I don't know that organization is as highly thought of around the league as they were, you know, 10 years ago, you know, even 5 years ago. You know, that front office is in a mess. Folks don't know, is Jim Buss going to be able to keep the control of it? Is Jeannie Buss going to, you know, kind of wrest control away from him? If she does she bring Phil back there? There's just so much drama out there. And, you know, they'll find somebody to take their money, I'm sure. But, you know, I could see them floundering for a while, because in a lot of ways their position right now is a stark contrast with the Celtics, right? You know, they keep trying to hang on, and a lot of it is kind of that focus on Kobe.
It's very similar to that, you know, that era in the early 90s where it was, do you hang on or do you dump the old guys? And the Lakers chose to spend an amazing amount, a staggering amount of money on Kobe, and he decided to take it. So, you know, they committed to a future that's by a 37-year-old man who in basketball years is about 70 with all the miles on his legs.
Well, and here's the thing, you know, even as their rosters, the talent on their roster continues to dilute, it's not like the Celtics where, yeah, they're losing talent on the roster, but they're getting future assets back that they're going to then be able to, right? The Lakers are doing the opposite. They're losing talent and they're losing assets, right?
And they're paying money.
And there's a chance that they're not going to have their pick, you know, this year. And what'll that, you know, how far will that send them back? And then they go out and they draft Julius Randle and he misses the season, you know, with an injury. So, you know, things just seem like they're continuing to slide even further for them this year. And, you know, who knows, some Laker historian 20 years from now could be writing a book like LHR did about the Celtics instead, this time writing about the Lakers and the 2015 season.
Well, I sure hope that they're not writing about this period of the Celtics in that way, because I can't stand another 22 years or 20 years at this point. You know, I don't foresee it.
Yeah, you know, I've got a 3-year-old son, and I'm trying to imagine what it'll be like for me if you know, he's in his early 20s and the Celtics haven't won another championship.
Oh, good God.
Like, how will
that
I explain
terrible.
That to him? That would be terrible. Well, folks, you can get us at 347-215-7771. We'll be joined shortly by Jared Weiss in the Garden Report, the Locker Room Report, waiting for him to call in. And for those of you who don't know, which I'm sure is very few people left out there, Jared is also the host of the CLNS Radio Garden Report. Garden Report is our HD post-game show on shot right on the parquet floor after every home game. Jared brings you locker room interviews and more, and you can find the Garden Report on our YouTube channel at www.youtube.com/CLNS Radio. We've also got Jerome Almeida out there on social media and Twitter at CLNS Radio and on Facebook at facebook.com/CLNS. Well, Nick, kind of going back a little bit to the game tonight, you know, you mentioned that the Celtics turned up the defensive intensity in the second half, and they really did a great job. They held Houston, I believe it was, to 9 points in the third quarter, outscoring them 22-9, and then, you know, held them to 33 points in the second half in total to really make it a game. It felt like the game was stuck on a 3-point lead, particularly at like 82-79 for quite a while there in the fourth quarter. And, you know, they cut the lead way back, but they weren't able to get over that hump. Donatus Muntinyunis had a huge first quarter to really get Houston out to a hot start. He scored on 9 of Houston's first 11 points and actually assisted on the other two with a really pretty drop-down pass for a 7-footer. He had a big three early in the fourth quarter to push Houston's lead back up to 9 and kick off a little mini run there that created some separation before the Celtics kind of made their final drive. And, you know, they fought back and seemed like they, you know, they might have a chance there. Muntinyunis followed up on a Harden miss and later finished on a nice lob from Harden. And the Celtics had really no answer for him. And that's something that's been a consistent theme with the team this season is just that inability to really protect the rim. And when they run into any kind of skilled big man at all, and Muntinyunis is a guy who's, you know, improved a lot in I think this is his third season, but, you know, he's not one of those dominant low post scorers, but they really had no answer for him. You know, do you see anybody on this roster that, you know, can eventually be maybe that guy in the middle, or is that something that they're really going to have to go out and find in free agency or in the draft or via trade?
It'd be great to see a stable big man in that paint. They're not. I don't see anybody at this point that has fits that mold. But, you know, we've had a tendency to understack the center position over the last couple of years, and I think it really hurt the late runs there by this team. So, by the previous team. So, I think Danny needs to find a big man, fundamentally, you know, a nice tree for that yeah. Center position. I don't see anybody on that team right now. On the team right now, I could fit that.
Yeah, there's a couple of of course in free agency, Marc Gasol is the big prize. DeAndre Jordan's out there. We talked about him a little bit earlier. You know, obviously there's some guys that could potentially be had in trade. Oh, another free agent this offseason is Omer Asik, a guy that, you know, I've touted for a while. I think he can be a fantastic player, man, in the middle. I'm not sure he'll be that eager to leave New Orleans. He's kind of in an ideal situation playing next to Anthony Davis right now. But there's a couple of names in the draft. This year, it's a surprisingly good year in the draft for big men. Of course, the guy getting a lot of attention is the freshman down at Duke, Jahili Okafor, who came into this season kind of a preseason pick for All-American status, and he's kind of lived up to that. And you know, he'll be in the running there for the number one overall pick, or maybe number two at worst. And so this, you know, Celtics might have an outside shot at him, but he's not that classic rim protector guy defensively. I think he reminds folks a lot of Big Al Jefferson, a guy that, you know, we're obviously familiar with here in Boston. A couple other names to look at in the draft are actually on the same team down in Kentucky. Of course, they've just got that tremendously deep team that comes at you in waves, particularly with their bigs. And actually, if you go a little bit deeper into the first round and into the second round, you can add a third name there. The big prize is the freshman Karl Anthony Towns, who's a really mobile 7-footer, some offensive skills, and just a, you know, really imposing, you know, physical athletic specimen at 7'1". Then there's another center who's been around for a couple of years in Kentucky. I think this is his junior year, Willie Cauley-Stein, who's a really not quite as offensively advanced as Towns, maybe not as much as high of an upside offensively, but just a tremendously flexible defensive player for a big guy. I mean, they have him out there chasing wings at times, and he's 7'1" with a really long wingspan, so he could be an impact player as a rim protector. And then another guy off their bench, Dakiri Johnson, is a 7-footer who, you know, may be available early in the second round. So, you know, the draft might be an option to fill that role, but, you know, you look at this Houston team, Nick, and they're really, that the Celtics face tonight, they're really reflective of how the game is maybe changing away from, you know, those big guys and the low post player. Of course, they've got Dwight Howard down there in Houston, and he missed the game tonight. But, you know, you watch them offensively, and they just spread everybody out around the three-point line. you know, everybody can shoot it from there. Even Monte Yunus hit, I believe it was 3 or 4 or 3 or 5 from downtown. And then they just kill you with the quick passing and the skip passes. And they, in the first half, they just had the Celtics scrambling all around. You know, do you see anything with how, you know, they're either trying to build this team right now or how Brad Stevens coaches the team, that they're kind of looking at, okay, the game is changing and we really need to place a greater emphasis on ball movement and the three-point shot? Do you see that being the type of team Ainge and Brad Stevens are looking to build here?
Seems like the team, the style they're playing, I don't know if it's just related to the players they have right now.
Yeah.
Or if it's going to be more of a perimeter move the ball type team right, normally. Now, I didn't follow Stevens and Butler. What was his offense there?
Yeah, they were, you know, there were a lot of ball movement. It was kind of a motion offense. I don't know that they were as three-point reliant as you're seeing the Celtics right now. You know, I think they did have that, of course, they had Gordon Haywood, who was a good range shooter, and then Matt Howard, who was kind of their nominal big man, and I think a big part of his role was drawing the other team's big man out on the floor with his, you know, ability to handle the ball and his outside shooting. But, yeah, when you look at the emphasis they put on Olynyk shooting the three, and Sullinger shooting the three, and even right. Some of the wings and guys like Bradley, and I want to come back to him in a second too. I think they're trying to do that, but I wonder, you know, do they really have the personnel for that type of game right now? I mean, really, to me, the only 3-point shooter on this team that scares you is Thornton, and I think Olynyk has the chance to develop into that. And of course, Thornton's notoriously a streaky shooter, but it really seems like they don't have that, you know, that consistent, you know, 3-point threat throughout the lineup that you really kind of need to play that type of game.
No, but I'll tell you, Houston chucks the ball up a lot, don't they?
Oh yeah, they do. They lead the league at 33 3-point attempts, and they lead the league in points generated by 3-pointers. And it's, you know, it's all, you know, that's the way the game is going. 3-pointers and free throws. You know, drives to the basket,
so
that result in free throws. It is
so
funny to watch, because, you know, for us purists.
Yeah. Yeah, growing up, it was such a small, it was like a very small element of the game, of an offensive scheme was a 3-point shot. And now it's just so, there's nothing back to the basket whatsoever. And you're right, the emphasis on driving, getting foul, I like that too, but the players have to hit the free throws. So,
yep.
You know, but yeah, it's just so different. I 30 3-point shots tonight by Houston. It probably would have been, you know, 10 games before, you know, any of those late 80s teams would have launched 33 3-point shots.
Yeah.
Has changed.
You know, that was a good week or a month even for the teams in the 80s. But
yeah.
All right. We've got Jared Weiss is here with the locker room report. We'll go ahead and bring Jared in. Jared, how are you tonight?
What's up, guys? Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, right. Thanks for joining us. So what was the mood like after the game? Of course, another game where Celtics fell behind early to one of the Western Conference powers, kind of similar to they did against Golden State. And then they really turned up the defensive intensity in the second half and clawed their way back into the game. How much of that was them turning up the intensity versus Houston thinking maybe, you know, hey, we can skate through the second half here?
Well, I mean, I think Stevens was pretty disappointed overall, but one thing he really was happy about was just the way that the Celtics came out after halftime, and they were able to really kind of shut down the Rockets, and just kind of not letting them kind of carve through the paint the way that the Rockets were in the first half. Mm-hmm. You saw Monte Yunus help Jared Sullinger kind of crumble into another terrible performance, and boy, is Jared Sullinger's season really falling apart. But, you know, there's just something about the way the Celtics looked in the first half. And really, Evan Turner epitomized it more than anybody, in that Turner just looked like he did, like he was ready to go home for a lot of this game. And Turner didn't necessarily have a terrible game, but it definitely wasn't a good one. And he even played some pretty good defense on James Harden at times. He shot 2 for 10 in this one. But there was this one sequence where Turner drove, got blocked, landed on the ground and just looked dazed for a minute as James Harden ran down the other way and dunked it on, I think it was Solinger's face. And it just so perfectly epitomized the difference in the first half of this game. It was just, it was one team that was ready to go, a team that lost its, I don't think Dwight Howard's the best player, Harden is. I think most people agree, at least this year. But definitely the centerpiece of their team. And they came out absolutely ready. And Donatas came out absolutely ready to fill those shoes. And the Celtics just look so pathetic. But for them to come out there, hold the Rockets to just 9 points, completely shut down their fast breaking in the third quarter, that was really great to see. And you know, Marcus Thornton hit some big shots, and he had three threes in the second half there. Their offense never really looked like it was going. And, of course, they scored 21, 21, 22, and 23. So the offense never really got off the ground in this game. And that's because they don't really have anybody on this team that could shoot pretty reliably. But the fact that they at least are able to rebound so well in the second half, and they never were able to close the gap, but they at least rebounded well, that was a nice little silver lining. And that's what made this game into at least a game that you can move on from rather than another game that knocks this team down into oblivion.
Yeah, you know, it's funny when you were mentioning Turner and the sequence. I thought you were going to talk about the sequence where he drove to the basket, had the ball kind of came up a little bit short on his little floater, but got his own rebound, went back up. You know, that one kind of bounced off the rim, and then he had a third tip at it and missed, and just the frustration level when he just committed a silly reach-in foul after that. To me, kind of, you could see it in the body language. He was just kind of like, you know what, I just want to go home tonight. And he spent a lot of time in the pine in the second half, and this was another one of those games where Stevens really rode with a lineup that, you know, battled back from a big lead. He's done that a couple of times this year. I know last time that happened was back in December, I think, in the Washington game, and of course it made a lot of news because Rondo and Green were on the bench for much of the third and fourth quarters. Was there any talk tonight about kind of riding that hot lineup there that really got them back into that game?
Yeah, well, I mean, Stevens talked about going small, and that was something that's been really crucial for them. I mean, right now they're going with a starting lineup that's got 3 6-8 guys and then a pair of 6'4 guys or so. And oh, actually, Turner's probably bigger than that. He's about 6'6", 6'7". But, they're kind of in a state where everyone's about the same height, so guys can switch a lot defensively. It doesn't mean that they're good at switching defensively, but they have guys that are able to switch because they're all relatively similar body types. And that's proven to be good for them at times and then disastrous at other times. And this team is very up and down. I mean, that's really what's going to happen when Evan Turner is kind of the focal point of your offense.
Yeah.
Your team is going to be incredibly erratic, and that's what happened tonight. Now, they got contribution from Marcus Thornton, and Tayshaun Prince very quietly had a nice game. He had 13 points. He had a pretty good second half, and I think that was one of the main reasons why they were able to stay in it. But until this team gets back Kelly Olynyk, this is what they're going to look like most of the time. They're going to get blown out early, and they're probably going to try to make comebacks just because they can get out and run. But they have no half-court offense, and their defense is in trouble. So, I mean, it's really as simple as long as Evan Turner is the guy running the show for you, this is what things are going to look like. Now, they brought in Marcus Smart a lot more in the second half. Marcus, although he only shot 1 for 6, and they were pretty much all threes, he looks pretty solid, and he continues to every single night play really intense defense, and he did a really wonderful job on James Harden in the second half. Him and Bradley got him a little bit, and Turner covered him a little bit, and they ended up holding Harden to just 1 for 8 from the field in the second half. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Smart is clearly changing the face of this team whenever he comes out there, but he also disappears offensively for a lot of the game, and you can't really trust him with the ball just yet. Things kind of get lost there. He makes some really great plays once in a while, but the big thing for this game was that they were actually trying to pull off the comeback. They almost did still, but Smart was playing well, and then he collided with, I think it was Trevor Ariza, and he hurt his right shoulder, and he didn't take a single shot in the game after that. And I thought Smart was going to be the one that was going to kind of carry this comeback for them, and if he hadn't gotten hurt, he probably would have taken more shots, but he basically just stopped. He got a layup later in the quarter, but that was it. He didn't take a single shot after that.
Yeah, he definitely played well defensively, and it seems like he's one thing he's starting to come around on. And you know, you and I have talked about this. I've been a little bit critical of his playmaking skills, but you know, it seems like he's starting to turn the corner, no pun intended, on the pick and roll a little bit, particularly out there with Zeller, and he found him with a nice pass, and Zeller almost came away with a monster dunk, you know, somewhere there in the fourth quarter, and kind of hit off the back of the rim but got fouled, but. You know, I agree. Like he, you know, he, outside of the wide open standstill three pointer, it doesn't seem like he's much of a threat to score offensively. And I think that's the thing I'm looking for him to feel really confident that, you know, he's going to be a big part of the future.
Well, the weird thing with Smart is that, and this has been pretty well covered recently by a few really good writers, but Marcus Smart is a guy that came into the league supposed to be a really good dribble penetrator, like a really phenomenal dribble penetrator, good mid-range game, good close-range game, and couldn't shoot to save his life. He's actually the leading three-point shooter of all rookies right now. But yep. I can't really remember seeing him take like a mid-range or close-range shot. It's all kind of trying to get to the rim or taking threes. And when he was in college, he was taking all the shots that James Harden takes. And James Harden was the guy that you kind of looked at as a possible doppelganger for him. They have a lot of similarities to their game, except that while James Harden hasn't played defense at all until this year, Smart's known for being a phenomenal defender. But right now, Smart is allergic to any shot inside the three. Tonight, he took six shots, and five of them were from three. The only one he actually hit was a layup, I think, towards the end there. But although I think he had a three in there, too. Maybe the stats I'm looking at are wrong, because I'm pretty sure I remember him having a layup at the end of the game. But the point being that, you know, Smart's a guy that when you're a scorer that comes into the NBA, you're supposed to not be able to shoot. That's your deficiency. You got to learn how to shoot.
Yeah.
And it looks like it's going the other way with Smart, where Smart has to kind of get comfortable penetrating, but he already is picking up shooting, which means that if he gets more comfortable with his game as he goes on, he's going to be a dynamic scoring threat from all over the court. And that'll be the difference between him being like a poor man's Monte Ellis and being an actual James Harden type. So that's going to be pretty exciting to see.
Yeah, I've never been a big fan of the Harden comparisons for him. I don't think he has the handle or the body control and agility. I think he's got more strength and power than Harden. Obviously, a much better defender. And you talked about the defense they played on Harden tonight. They did a really good job on him, and they kept him off the line too, which is huge. A matchup I was really looking at intrigued by early on was especially in the first half, there was a lot of one-on-one head-to-head Patrick Beverley and Avery Bradley. And I think, Bradley had a rough game, and I think a lot of that had to do with Beverley. And we like to talk in Boston about, what a great, all-world defender Avery Bradley is. But I almost wonder if Beverley took a little bit of that to heart. Houston kind of surprised me in that first half, and I think Beverley was a big part of that with their defensive intensity on the perimeter. Was there any talk about how, Celtics were kind of – Houston had them kind of back on their heels there in that first half?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, Beverly's kind of replaced Bradley as far as his role in the league as like the kind of the elite on-ball irritator up at the high press. Bradley has kind of, their reputation's kind of faded for him. And really this year, his defense hasn't really been that notable. And he's lost a lot of individual matchups pretty poorly this year. And Avery, his shooting, I think a lot of it was a product of just him getting stuck with the bad shots. We saw Bradley take a lot of shots that were kind of just like, this is the only shot left after a very poorly executed set. And that was just kind of the one thing that was left for them to do was just for Bradley to throw up a bad shot. And I think that's a big byproduct of why he went 0-for-4 from deep. But to really answer your question better, it was just that Beverley is such an intense ball of energy. He's just craziness built into a 6'1 body, and he just comes at you early in the game. It's like you think you're ready for this game, and this guy's been punching walls for the last 25 minutes. And he comes out there, and he's in your shorts. He's all over the place. He's scratching your arm and all that kind of stuff. And that really can psych you out of the game. You just feel like you're just not you're not physically ready for it when you have a guy just going at you with such intensity. And that's what we're seeing Smart's been doing a lot this year too. And you see how effective having a little guy out on the perimeter defensively that's just clawing away and getting up under your chest constantly, even especially early on in the game. We see the way that Smart's able to single-handedly change the pace of the game and the momentum of the game by doing that, and Beverly really does that well. And Beverly was putting so much ball pressure, forcing turnovers earlier in this game, and they were able to get the ball to Monta Yunus, who was just on fire. And that was a huge reason for why they were able to get out with that lead.
Well, anything else stand out to you tonight or in the locker room after the game? You know, anything else that folks were talking about?
I think the big thing was I talked to James Harden about Hassan Whiteside too tonight. I told him about that, and he was pretty blown away. But Hassan Whiteside is taking the league by storm. He's the instead of Linsanity, I probably call it Hussanity.
Yeah.
Hassan wordplay there. It doesn't sound that good when I say it out loud. Oh, well, I tried. But I'd say after the game, complimenting Brandon Bass and just how he continues to be a steady rock for this team. He had 17 and 8 tonight. And he's kind of the one guy that's been consistent on this roster the entire year. Look at everyone that's here, everyone that was here beforehand. He's the one guy that's been pretty reliable the entire year. And I said it almost every time I've talked about him on the air in the last 2 months. I really hope this guy gets traded to a team like Houston or something like that. Houston, clearly with the way Monta Yunus and Josh Smith and Jarrett Jones are playing, they don't have any need for Brandon Bass. But Bass deserves to get traded to a contending ball club because this guy is ready to make a championship run. It's pretty apparent.
Yeah, you talk about Hassan Whiteside. It looks like he had 24 rebounds tonight. And actually, Dallas ended up blowing out the Heat tonight. They went on a 37-2 run at one point to take a 21-point victory. So I'm glad I looked that up. 24 rebounds, pretty impressive. And apparently, Whiteside is an interesting guy. Turned a lot of folks off during the draft with, I guess, expecting to come in and be a first-team All-Star right out of the gate. So. Interesting story down there in Miami.
Well, when Whiteside was in college, earlier in college, he was projected to be a top 10 pick, and he ended up falling in the second round to the Kings, and that was a real shocker. But his body he's very similar to Larry Sanders, I guess. And Larry Sanders is another guy that's kind of gone off the deep end here. But the talent is absolutely there. He's 7'1", he's got a 7'6", 7'7" wingspan, can jump out of the building. So the talent was there. And it's great. There's a lot of these guys that they flame out too early and they get a second chance with a place that is able to develop them, especially developing them in the D League and then kind of ease them into their rotation. And you've seen how well it works for Whiteside. I mean, it worked for Miami bringing Birdman back too. I mean, his career was completely gone and he was able to recover his career there. Give Eric Spoelstra credit. Spoelstra's really good with these backup centers, really revitalizing them. They got even Eric Dampier's corpse was able to get some good runs.
It's hard to score baskets with a big fork sticking out of your back, right? To channel Bill Simmons there. Well, Jared, and I'll channel a little Bill Belichick here. On to Sunday and the Miami Heat on Super Bowl Sunday. We're going to hear from you after the game then?
Yeah, well, you'll hear from me talking about the Celtics, and you won't care whatsoever because there'll only be one thing to worry about. But I'm on to Cincinnati. We're all on to Cincinnati, and it's going to be a good one.
Excellent. All right, Jared, got anything else for us tonight before we let you go?
No, that's it for me.
Thanks a lot, as always.
All right, thanks, man. Have a good night.
Thanks, you too. Well, folks, that was Jared Weiss with his Locker Room Report brought to you by Lynda.com. Again, if you're looking to expand your skills in 2015, how about looking online to do it? Go to lynda.com, check out their free trial, and learn a new skill, learn a new language. Pick from over 4,500 courses they have to offer for you to kind of grow your personal development. Well, Nick, great stuff as usual by Jared.
Always good, Jared. Year 3, 4, I think, doing this, and he has only gotten better. So Jared's great. Great to hear from Jared at TD Garden.
Absolutely. Before we go, just
fun to be on with you.
Yeah, absolutely. Quick look around the league. Of course, Celtics lose 93-87 to Houston.
Atlanta.
The big Yeah, the big game tonight was Atlanta. They won their 18th straight at home against the Trailblazers, 105-99. That was a really tight game. It was touch and go there for a while. So they're starting to creep up on that 20 consecutive wins streak, which only a few teams in history have done. You know, Jared also mentioned the Miami Heat and the Mavericks. The Mavericks, of course, I mentioned, went on a 37-2 run to break that game open in the third and fourth quarter to beat the Heat, despite Hassan Whiteside's 14 points and 24 rebounds. New Orleans Pelicans held on down in New Orleans to defeat Doc Rivers Clippers 108-103. The Cavaliers, it looked like they're riding the ship a little bit, took home a 101-90 win in Cleveland over the Kings. The Toronto Raptors in overtime defeated the Nets 127-122, and the Philadelphia 76ers get a win. They're up to 10 on the season, so they have avoided tying their franchise and league low in wins. Of course, the Timberwolves are still sitting at 8, so cross your fingers they may have a chance at the all-time record here. They won 103-94, and right now going on at the end of the first quarter, the Suns lead the Bulls 26-23, and with 3 minutes to go in the game, the Jazz are holding on against the Warriors. They're up by 15, so it looks like they're going to send the Warriors home with their only 8th defeat in 44 games. So that'll be a big win for Utah out in Utah. Well, Nick, as always, great time working with you on the show tonight.
Yeah, it was a blast, and braved the late night here, Rich. You know, I'm not a late night person, but this was fun, and it was a good game. Second half was worth watching, that's for sure. Jared was down on it.
Yeah, a little bit. I think, you know, those moral victories get a little old after a while. But, yeah, it could have been a lot worse. You know, I thought this was going to go the way of the first Houston game where they got blown out down in Houston. And it would have been nicer to chat after a win. But I think the effort there in the second half, I think, kind of redeemed it a little bit. So.
Sure did. But, yeah, this was fun, Rich. And we'll catch up next time.
Yeah, absolutely. Good night, folks, and we'll see you on the CLNS Radio postgame show Super Bowl Sunday, directly after the Celtics versus Heat on Sunday. Have a good night.
This has been the Celtics postgame show on CLNSradio.com. Thanks for listening. The Celtics might not be in action every day, but we are, so stay connected. Follow us on Twitter at CLNS Radio and check out our broadcast schedule for the best weekly sports podcasts on the web. Thank you.